No other European country has copied the NHS model in half a century. Almost all comparable countries use a mix of funding mechanisms, rather than relying on taxation alone. And most of them outperform the NHS in health outcomes. UK cancer survival rates lag behind those of comparable countries. A&E delays are increasing. The number of operations being cancelled is dire. Staffing rates are in free fall, and the tick box target culture is sending doctors and dentists screaming into the private sector. The UK has one doctor for 356 people, against a developed world average of one for 277. The NHS's archaic divisions of labour between GPs, hospital, doctors, pharmacies and clinics is now indefensible. So too is the division between the NHS itself and social and domiciliary care. As any victim of these restrictive practices knows, treatment delayed is treatment denied. Sooner or later, the pressure of demand, now from all age groups, will force the NHS to choose between rationing by some form of means-tested pricing or by further bureaucratic delay. Last year's Guardian survey of foreign systems showed there were plenty of other ways to organise public health. Before the coming of the NHS, London's local health service was regarded as the best in Europe. It's not that now. So, what are the alternatives, if any? In countries without the NHS, what does healthcare and insurance look like for sick, older, or poorer people? Are the rich able to purchase a luxury tier of healthcare? And what happens if your insurer goes bankrupt? In countries like the Netherlands, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, or Israel? To discuss, I've asked Dr. Christian Niemitz to join me, author of the book Universal Healthcare Without the NHS. Hi, Christian.
Hello.
Now, Christian, my first question to you is, well, I want to start by asking, what inspired you, first of all, to write Universal Healthcare Without the NHS? And do you think the need for such a publication has increased or decreased since its publication in 2016?
Well, it was just a frustration that, for me, it was always kind of obvious that when I talk about market-oriented, market-based forms of healthcare delivery, that I'm not talking about the US system, which is probably the worst example of its kind, but it's just that everyone automatically assumed that that must be what I had in mind. So I just thought maybe I should set it out once and for all, a basic overview of how other systems work and how a market-based system can also work, a universal market-based system, because there are plenty of examples around.
So has the need for it increased or decreased, do you think? The need for that explanation?
Well, let's just say some of the responses that we've had since the publication of the book have been absolutely hysterical. Plenty of articles about conspiracy theories, about how this was somehow part of a concerted effort, if you've seen most of it, to undermine or to infiltrate the Department of Health and somehow destroy the NHS from within. And there's the panic at the moment that a trade deal could mean you get the privatization of the NHS through the back door. So it's as febrile and hysterical the atmosphere as it's always been. So if anything, it has increased.
When your response to that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but your response to the scare theory that's out there now that the NHS will be up for sale if we have a free trade agreement with the United States of America. Would your response to that not be, look, there are private healthcare companies in Europe. Why haven't they been attempting to buy the NHS?
Yes, it's the same thing. We are at the moment, as EU members, already in a large free trade area with countries that have large private healthcare sectors, and we still will be after Brexit in some other way. And whichever way you do this, if that were an issue, it would have happened long ago. You would have had Dutch healthcare companies, Swiss ones, or German ones, or even French ones, even France has a very large private healthcare sector, trying to take over the NHS. But that's just not the way it works. Mm. It's a domestic policy decision whether we want it private or public or mix.
So then, speaking of those alternatives, what would the healthcare be like for a sick, older or poorer person born in, say, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Germany or Belgium?
Yeah, well, they would have... Well, these countries have a social health insurance system.
So that, they don't that have the NHS.
They have no national health service. They have a universal private insurance system. Everybody has private insurance. But social insurance differs from conventional private insurance in so far as the premiums you pay, the insurance premiums, do not depend on your individual health risk. So if you have a chronic condition, if you have a known family history of something, some risk factor, that means your healthcare is likely to be more expensive than the healthcare of other people, then in a social insurance system, that doesn't mean that your premiums will be higher. And older people don't pay higher premiums either. Insurers cannot discriminate on the basis of health status. Everyone pays the same premium for a given product. The way they make this work, the way they prevent cherry picking in other ways, is through a system where those health insurance companies that happen to have a lot of good risks, let's say a lot of young people, a lot of people in good health, those insurance companies have to compensate the ones that end up with a larger number of bad risks, of people with elevated risk factors. Say a large proportion of older people, a large proportion of diabetics, asthma, whatever it is, they would be compensated. And once the insurance companies take those compensation payments into account, it doesn't matter to them whether you are 20 years old, go to the gym every day, never need more than aspirin, or whether you're 80 years old and have been hospitalized multiple times and have multiple chronic conditions. Doesn't matter. The latter person would, of course, incur higher costs. They would know that. But they would receive a payment from this equalization fund, and that would compensate them for that extra cost. So they have no reason to be in any way biased against that sick person. So that's why, even though they're technically banned from discriminating, but actually that is just a safety mechanism. They, even if you abolished that ban, they wouldn't do it just because there would be no rational economic reason.
So why have the likes of the Netherlands, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, or Israel not adopted the NHS?
They don't see a reason to. They've had that system for a long time. In the German case, it goes back to technically the Bismarck years, 1880s, but it has existed before just in a non-state form. And the same is more or less true in these other places. Historically, it's evolved in a similar way as healthcare in Britain, where there was a lot of where there were cooperative insurance organizations, the friendly societies here. It's just that here we've gone for this extreme approach in 1948 of nationalizing the whole sector, and that meant that these mutual insurance organizations were suddenly superfluous. They were crowded out. There was no need for them anymore. Whereas in those systems, rather than just the state taking over everything, there was some legislation to make sure that everybody was included, but the organizations as such persisted. So that's why some of the German health insurers, for example, are more than 100 years old. Some of them would have existed before the Bismarck years, and they just got integrated into that system. Coverage increased over time until it reached 100%. But once you've got everybody covered, once everybody can afford a broad package of healthcare services in that way, primary care, specialists, hospitals, medicines, once everybody is covered, why would you change that if people are more or less happy with that?
So then why do you think people automatically assume that when you talk about reform of the healthcare system in this country, they automatically jump to a sort of marketization without universal access and assume that people will be left on the streets and, in worst cases, the worst parts of the system in the United States of America?
It's partly deliberate. There are people who make that argument who must know, who are quite well informed about healthcare, who must know that there are universal alternatives, but who just use the US system as a scarecrow. And otherwise, it's just not that widely known. how these other systems work, because normally why would you, unless you live somewhere else for a longer period, you normally wouldn't know much about the healthcare systems of other places. But even so, there is something peculiar about it. If somebody said, well, that's not a hypothetical example. If somebody writes a Guardian article about how brilliant the Finnish school system is, most people wouldn't know in great detail how the Finnish school system works, but you would just start from the presumption that they also have universal education, why wouldn't they? And that it's generally no worse than here, because why would it be worse? So you wouldn't answer if somebody said our school system is no good, we should do it more like they do in Finland. You wouldn't say, why do you hate teachers? Why do you denigrate the brilliant work of our great teachers? Or why do you hate poor children? Do you think poor children shouldn't get the opportunity to go to school? You would just start from the presumption, okay, there's somebody proposing a different system. I don't know much about that system, but I'll just assume that that is also a universal system which gives everyone a chance. And then you would ask, okay, what does their system look like? And in healthcare, somehow, we don't do that.
Do you think there's a concern out there that if we adopted some of these systems that seem to be doing quite well in the likes of Europe, that actually we'd end up with the rich in this country being able to purchase a luxury tier of healthcare? Is that the case?
There is a broad minimum package in those systems that everybody has to have. And for that package, it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. So there is no such thing as a rich person's insurer, a luxury insurer, or a poor person's insurer. Just if somebody if a citizen of the Netherlands or Switzerland or any of those systems told you the name of their health insurer or what hospital they go to, you wouldn't be able to deduce any information about their income or their socioeconomic status. You wouldn't be able to say, oh, you've got this health insurer, you must be poor. That's not the way it works. There is, of course, you can always buy optional extras. You can always buy luxury healthcare, but that's true here as well. You can go private here as well. And in that sense, yes, having more money always means you have extra options. But at least for that basic package, it wouldn't make a difference whether you're rich or poor. And since that basic package, maybe that basic is the wrong term because it sounds like some bare minimum, but since that is very generously defined and includes pretty much everything that you might normally need, for all intents and purposes, no. I'd say if Bill Gates moved to a country that had that model, he wouldn't get better healthcare than an unemployed person in that country.
So if we were to overnight introduce this system with the basic package, and you were to walk into a hospital needing, I don't know, say you broke your leg, you were to walk into a hospital, an NHS hospital, or rather a new mixed system hospital, with this broken leg in immense pain, you were to walk in and you were entitled to receive the basic package, as everyone would be. Yeah. Would you notice a difference? What would the difference be for an average Brit?
Oh, in that situation, you wouldn't notice any difference. It would be just like before. You would have to produce a health insurance card. You would have to show them who your insurer is so that they know how they can claim the money back. But of course, if it's an A&E case, and that they wouldn't, even if you don't have it with you, they wouldn't say no, go away. They wouldn't turn you down. But just generally, if you get a regular appointment, something that you can book in advance, you would have to show your health insurance card at some point, and then they would get the money back from that insurer. So it's not that you would have to pay yourself. Although that depends on the exact system. In the Netherlands, you can choose between an arrangement where you pay upfront and then claim the money back, or a system where the insurer pays directly, so you never see any transfers. But otherwise, no, that you wouldn't notice a difference in that situation. You notice a difference at a different level, which is you would be able to choose between different insurance companies and different types of insurance contract. So you could, for example, if you live in Switzerland in particular, you can choose how much choice of providers you want to have. You can go for a standard contract where you can go to just any doctor, any specialist, any hospital, unlimited choice, or you can opt into a contract where it would be more like in Britain, where you have your GP, who you're registered with, and you cannot go to a specialist unless you get a referral. You can go for this option with less choice. That's generally cheaper. You can save something like a fifth of the insurance premium, and then it would just be up to you. It depends on your preferences. If, for example, if you have a family doctor that you've always been with and you're happy with them, then it might be quite rational to say, I'd rather have this cheaper option. I trust my GP that they would refer me if necessary, so I don't need this option of having unlimited choice at all times. And you can then save that money and spend it on other things, depending on your priorities.
And what would happen then if the, you've mentioned the insurance-based policies, if this insurer was to go bankrupt or go under, what would then happen to your insurance policy? If you were to fall ill the day after, for example, what would happen?
Well, they would be under administration. The basics would still be covered until everybody is transferred to a different insurer. So it would be like here when your electricity supplier goes bankrupt. That doesn't mean that the next day you try to switch on the light and nothing happens. You would just be transferred to a different company. At least in the German system for a while, there was a lot of there were a lot of mergers and acquisitions, because initially there wasn't a lot of choice. You were more or less assigned to your insurer on the basis of occupation or the region where you lived. And then 30 years ago or so, they introduced complete free choice between different insurers. And as a result of that, there was a lot of there were a lot of mergers, a lot of market consolidation was going on, where some insurers were taken over by others, and you would then get a letter at some point saying you are now with this insurer. If you're not happy with that, you can change, but for now this will be the default option. But for you, nothing changes in that situation. That will be something that the insurers have to work out amongst themselves. But I'm not aware of anyone ever falling through the cracks for that reason.
You've mentioned the fact that you wouldn't notice a difference in your ability to access healthcare, but would you notice a difference in the outcomes of that healthcare?
Yes, so far, at least insofar as we can compare outcomes across the different systems, they all have vastly better health outcomes than the NHS. Some better than others, but I'm not aware of a single social health insurance system that has terrible outcomes. None of them is a failure. And that's why I'm fairly confident that this is an improvement. If we were just comparing two countries, then you can always say, well, maybe it's other factors. Maybe they just have a better system of medical education or whatever. But in that case, social insurance is a broad type of system, exists in lots of places. It's with variation. That's the German system, it's the Swiss system, the Dutch, the Belgian, in quite a different way in Israel, and now also in the Czech Republic and in Slovakia. They've adopted that in the early 90s after the change from socialism, where they changed from an NHS type system to this competitive insurance system, and they now have, as far as I know, the best outcomes in Eastern Europe. So none of those systems has bad outcomes. If you compare survival rates for the big killers, such as cancer, stroke, respiratory diseases, those systems are always ahead of the NHS.
Can you walk me through what it was like as a German, or what it would be like as a German coming here from the system that they've got in Germany to coming to the United Kingdom and accessing the NHS? What are those key differences? And, you know, what would a British person listening to this not understand is completely different or indeed better about healthcare in Germany?
Well, there's the discourse is different, of course, that there is this this hysteric defensiveness about the NHS, which you don't quite get if you come from, well, not even specifically the German system, but I guess pretty much any other system, that in in other systems, it would not be a big deal if somebody questioned the system, even at a fundamental level. I remember people saying this quite often in political talk shows. There were always critics of the healthcare system, people who said our healthcare system is no good, we should replace it with a different one, we should do it differently. And of course, not everyone agrees with that. Most people don't in that case. That's why it hasn't been replaced. But it's not a radical position. It's not that somebody would be people would be outraged or offended because somebody makes that suggestion, that somebody criticizes the healthcare system. Why shouldn't they? That's a policy position like any other. We can argue the pros and cons. I may disagree with that person ultimately, but I wouldn't be mad at them. I wouldn't throw accusations at them. So in that case, there is a calmer atmosphere around it. You can question the healthcare system without being considered a bad person. From a practical perspective, well, I wasn't familiar with the idea that you have to register with a GP and that that you need a referral if you want to see a specialist. Because in the German system, you can normally just go to any specialist. Unless, I think that exists now, that option, you can waive that freedom of choice. Like in Switzerland, you can go for this more coordinated system where your freedom of choice is more limited. You can opt into that, but you would have to make that choice. The default option would be, if you want to see a specialist, you just ring up the specialist and make an appointment. There's no, you don't need, so the concept of the referral, it doesn't exist as such, or it is less widespread. It would be only for, let's say, something like an operation. Of course, you couldn't say I want heart surgery. That would have to go through a doctor. But if you just want to see a specialist, that would be something that you would book straight away.
So then, to conclude, Christian, can we have universal healthcare without the NHS?
Well, pretty much everyone in the developed world has achieved it. Loads of systems have no organization that's comparable to the NHS. We've talked about social insurance systems. That's, of course, not the only option. There are also systems that have public insurers where you don't have the choice between different types of insurance, but where you have a lot more choice as a patient. You have... the state paying for most healthcare without providing that healthcare itself. That would be like a system like in Australia or in France or in Canada, where there is a marketplace in healthcare of sorts, and the government then pays for you. But whichever way they do it, they all have universal access, and that's just not a big deal. This can be arranged in any system.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.
Now, what do you think, listening at home? Is it time for a conversation about reform of our National Health Service? Given all of the stats on UK cancer survival rates, on A&E delays, and on the number of operations being cancelled, let us know at IEA London, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you get your podcast.